This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dynasty rookie drafts are here. That means we deliver a top 40 rookie rankings just for you. In fact, Hayden, we flip the tables. My rankings.
Yes.
And you get to be the passenger. This is a change of roles here.
I don't mind it at all. Don't mind this at all.
So how this is going to work. This is Superflex, not tight end premium. I might give a comment here or there. Hayden might do the exact same thing when it comes to tight ends and how they might move up or down the board based on that. I know most of your rookie drafts out there are 48 picks. That's why I wanted to go all the way to 40. And I'm also tiering them so you know areas that you might want to trade up to in order to get one of those premium players that's in a tier above.
Yep. And obviously, you have to draft around the positions you're strongest and weakest at as well. So helping with the tiers to kind of make those decisions.
Okay. It's time. There are three names in the first tier, and we start with Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. No brainer, Hayden. Ideal situation for a rookie quarterback throwing to three wide receivers and an experienced play caller attached to them. To me, it doesn't matter what type of scoring you're really in. I think Caleb Williams has the best chance of being a top five and at worst a top 10 quarterback here in the near future.
He's going to be able to scramble, so that helps us out for fantasy. And it's not even just a short-term thing. DJ Moore and Rome Odunze will be there for the next couple seasons. So, I think this is the best prospect we've seen in a very long time. And also, in ways he wins, is helpful for fantasy. So, yeah, this is the easiest 101 I could remember.
Cardinals wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. is up next. You have a top 15 quarterback in the league who now has his top wide receiver. I actually loved what Drew Petzing's offense did last year with some lesser talents. He got quite creative in spots. He took a lot of Kevin Stefanski principles, which, by the way, we saw elevate Amari Cooper into fantastic status this past year. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the true X who wins in the dark arts already, has extreme body control. His one-on-one situations are fantastic. And I'm excited to see Kyler with this level and this type of a wide receiver attached to him.
Kyler also under contract long-term. I think that his numbers are going to be good enough to justify his own contract. So Marvin's going to be in a very healthy situation without much wide receiver help behind him. It's going to be just him and Trey McBride, I think, for the foreseeable future. Right now, underdog, pick 'em lobby for Marvin Harrison this year, 1,000 yards is the higher or lower. Pretty rare for a rookie wide receiver to be in that four digits.
Yes, it is. Number three, Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers, the number one pass catcher on this team in year one. It's that simple. Literally zero competition. I mean, there's nothing at running back. There's almost certainly nothing at tight end because Darren Waller sounds like he is going to retire. I know this team made the playoffs in 2022. They were awful in 2023. A major part of that was the offensive line being destroyed at the start of the year and then quarterback injuries after that. So I am excited to see a Mike Kafka, Brian Daboll offense for the first time in New York to have a pass catcher that allows them to attack multiple blades of grass. I think they'll be far more vertical than the last time we saw them being good, which was in 2022.
Yeah, the only difference is that his uncertainty long-term, just tied to the quarterback and head coach and all that type of stuff, is a little bit more up in the air versus Marvin Harrison. But both these guys, 99th percentile in my model, everyone knows that these guys are excellent. And I think that some teams did have Malik Nabers ahead of Marvin Harrison on their own boards just based off the profiles. These two guys are complete lights out. These would have been the best wide receivers in probably the last five draft classes.
Giants GM Joe Shane said that that Malik Nabers was the fourth youngest player on their board out of a 450 in total in their draft class. He doesn't miss practices. He doesn't miss games. He's wired like that, I should say. He's a generator was how Brian Daboll
described
him, which is a cool word for explosive plays, right? He takes a jet sweep or a short route to the house for 30 plus yards out. He's a generator, I think, is one way I'm going to continue to keep that phrase in mind. Okay, that clears the first tier. Let's go to the second tier. for me, that begins, again, super flex with Drake May. I understand that we can get like short term trees through the forest, that type, yep, where the situation is not great right now. But let's also not forget how athletic Drake May is, right? We will get scrambling yards. We will get rushing touchdowns. This is also a quarterback who isn't coming from a perfect situation that he played in North Carolina this past season. And we'll get to this when we get to his wide receivers. He's been working out this offseason, did a couple throwing sessions with Jalen Polk, a few throwing sessions with Javon Baker. And we have seen this Kevin Stefanski tree, Drew Petsing previously spoke about, Alex Van Pelt now, have pretty much instant success, and that offense travels. And I'm excited to see Drake May develop as this goes along.
Yeah, the Drake May experience, he's super young, so you have to take the really long-term vision here, but I would also put him in this exact spot. As a reminder, as a sophomore, he led college football in total EPA, which is the number one stat that I look at for college quarterbacks. And like you just mentioned, for fantasy purposes, he runs a lot. Not only was he top five in his scrambles attempts in the last two seasons when he was a quarterback, he also picks up first downs at an elite rate. Like 50% of his scrambles go for a first round. So he has this like Josh Allen effect where he's scrambling, but it's not like because he has to. He's doing it because it's smart to do that. And he's got the body to kind of hold up long term.
Next, Jaden Daniels, fifth overall player. He's going to start immediately in Washington. Would be a stunner if Marcus Mariota gets any starts.
That would not be good.
They described Jaden Daniels as the best deep ball thrower in the draft. And the way that he runs, he takes your soul as a defense. Our buddy Ian Harditz just posted a tweet saying and really outlining, if you have 150 rushes at the quarterback position, you're almost destined to be a top seven finisher out there. 150 rushes would be fascinating to see with Jaden Daniels' style, because his rushing upside is going to be awesome, but it's different than a bunch of other quarterbacks out there. Like, I would almost describe it from a scrambling standpoint closer to Justin Fields than I would as Lamar Jackson. You know, Justin Fields, it's almost all or nothing. It's less decisive, I think, whereas Lamar's, we know that he shields his body. He almost glides out there, whereas we've described, at least I have, Jaden Daniels as both the Roadrunner and the Wile E. Coyote at the exact same time. But again, on top of that rushing, which is fantastic for us in fantasy football, we have Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson out there. And I'm expecting a huge third-year rebound for Jahan Dotson.
Yeah, that'd be very clutch if that happens for Jaden. I think that those two guys can win vertically from the slot and from the outside, which is what Jaden Daniels is familiar with. I am with you that he's closer to Fields than Lamar Jackson in terms of pressure as well, how he absorbs that. Lamar Jackson's been pretty good at that historically. Justin Fields has been not a starter because of that. We'll see where Jaden Daniels kind of slides into that. He was successful against pressure because he would just run for a 60-yard touchdown. We'll see if that's as likely to do in the NFL, but for fantasy purposes, even if he is a little bit up and down as a passer, we know that he's just going to be picking up first downs with his legs. And like Ian said, that's more or less the only thing that matters at the position.
I am actually somewhat less concerned, while it still is a concern, about the middle of the field numbers that he threw at LSU, because I think that offense could operate just like the Philadelphia Eagles offense did, where you have these outside burners that when they get one-on-one situations that you can create a bit more often in LSU, that you just take advantage of that, especially where he's able to throw the ball. I mean, their passing offense was built around the strengths of his game. I am more concerned about his plan versus pressure, as you outlined. I mean, 51% of his pressures ended in a pass. Like, that is unreal numbers that we just do not see, you know? Right. And so that is an interesting translation to me that I do have a bit wary of. Let's put it that way.
I will say he also was like number two or number three all time in total EPA this last year. It's like him and Joe Burrow. Obviously, it helps to have Malik Nabers, and we'll get to Brian Thomas in a second, but he is a very high upside prospect as well, especially for fantasy. So I have the fifth pick in my dynasty league. I'm very happy to have one of these five guys. This is like a pretty rare quarterback class on top of the two wide receivers we just mentioned.
Well, the tier continues. JJ McCarthy is next for me. Again, keep in mind, this is Superflex. He's coming from an NFL system into an NFL system. You know, he will play this year, in my opinion. This is an offense that will actually throw more than his offense did at the college level, you know, proportionally, when you think about it, statistically, percentage-wise. And that gets me excited, because when you looked at where J.J. McCarthy was at his best in college, it was throwing over the middle of the field into those tight windows, but it was also in those third and five plus situations. Well, we can translate that same third and five, third and seven, third and 12 scenarios that he had at the college level into first and 15 or second and 11 or second and eight. And I guarantee you what we have seen with Kevin O'Connell, especially this past season, when you're going from Kirk Cousins to Joshua Dobbs to Jaren Hall to Nick Mullins, he changed his offense in ways to incorporate that team's or that player's strengths. J.J. McCarthy is far more talented than the final three that we talked about. And I'm excited for him to fit this offense with, you know, at least Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison healthy, plus other players like Aaron Jones and T.J. Hockenson.
Yeah, I think T.J. Hockenson will be a long-term guy there. Obviously, Addison and Jefferson for sure will be. And then the other thing to consider with McCarthy, indoor at home, and then that division, Lions, Packers, the Bears with Caleb Williams. I mean, this division long-term is going to be putting up ridiculous amount of points. I think it's going to be a very fantasy-friendly environment for J.J. McCarthy. I think that people have underestimated just how athletic he is. He's a five-star guy from IMG Academy. He's won everywhere he goes, and on occasion, he'll scramble around, pick up some key first downs. He didn't have to do that very often because of the Michigan offense, but maybe there's a little bit more hidden upside with his rushing ability as well.
Next in tier two is Rome Odunze. And I actually have no notes here. I mean, I think Rome Odunze just fills in into that X wide receiver spot for this team. And like they have the three wide receivers to fill the three traditional spots extremely well. And DJ Moore being the movement motion guy and Keenan Allen, who has been in two wide receiver sets in the past. And we'll probably see some two wide receiver sets from Shane Waldron, but fills in the slot perfectly. I do not know the statistical upside of just this season for Rome Odunze. I could see him being, in a crazy world, the team's number one getter this year. He could also be number three very easily. But beyond this year, we don't know about the strengths of Keenan Allen beyond 2024. And I think this link between Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze is potentially magical.
Underdog Fantasy Pick'em Lobby has Rome Odunze at 750 yards for this rookie season, which seems about right. It's definitely a tier or two below both Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison, which I think is justified based off of the rookie quarterback. We think Caleb's going to be very good, but a lot of mouse to feed. Keenan Allen, one-year deal. I'm not expecting him to be a part of the plans long-term. We'll see if that's the case. So hopefully we don't get a full JSN season like we had when he was dealing with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. The difference between JSN and Rome Odunze to me as prospects is pretty substantial.
Do you think I should have him either in the top tier with those other wide receivers, or do you think I should have him at the top of this list behind them?
If I was going to be adjusting the tiers, I think that you can make a case that Drake May and Jaden Daniels should go up a tier with the other guys. But yeah, I think if it's Jaden Daniels versus Rome Odunze, I think just look at your own roster. I think these guys are very highly rated. Rome Odunze will be a stud long-term. I think J.J. McCarthy will be too. So if you're really desperate for quarterbacks, I would not blame you if you went with one of the top guys. If you're set there, then I think that you can definitely take Rome Odunze. This is like a really solid top seven.
And more on that quarterback position in a little bit, because I think it is a much larger dynasty fantasy football conversation than just about these prospects. And again, we'll get to that in a moment. Okay, to close out this tier, Brock Bowers. Now the tight end of the Las Vegas Raiders. I know people are terrified of this situation, but situations, especially quarterbacks and play callers, can change in a single offseason. You know, what I see about Brock Bowers is he can fulfill on an offense how three other tight ends across the league have been utilized. And I think in this case, it's going to be Evan Ingram-ish, where it's going to be a lot of split flow work across the formation as the move guy and pick up yards after catch situations. Guess what? That's a massive area that he had at Georgia. I think he can do Sam Laporta stuff, but I don't know if, you know, Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell are quite Ben Johnson plus Jared Goff in those scenarios. Yeah. But at the same time, other than Davante Adams on one side of the field, you can also split out Brock Bowers and others on the other section. And that was a dynamic duo when it comes to condensed fields, trying to match up for defenses. Again, I want you to look long-term here. And I think Brock Bowers is a very, very, very intriguing prospect that I'm way ahead of compared to Dalton Kincaid, who's also a round one tight end last year.
Right. I think that's the way to approach this in terms of adjusted production based off of his age and the school he went to. It was the best I've had all time. Now, the environment was unquestionably a bad spot for him to go among the more realistic spots, just because Antonio Pierce wants to run the ball. Luke Getsy is Luke Getsy. We don't know what the quarterback situation is. We do know that Gardner Minshew's on a 2-year contract there. So there's a lot of things to work out. Davante Adams, though, his guaranteed money is gone after this year. So if Brock Bowers does well, and then they get rid of Davante Adams, all of a sudden, he basically has no target competition moving forward. So I think it's not the best landing spot for rookie season, but I think that long-term, the upside should hit. I think that was a really good comparison between Evan Engram. Lots of stuff in the flat, the yards after the catchability. Oh, yeah. And I think that he just is more physical and like on seam route to what Evan Engram has shown. But I think like that's what you're going to get at the very least, Evan Engram. Hopefully he finds a quarterback eventually as good as Trevor Lawrence.
And we've talked about it a lot, how there's kind of this old guard at the tight end position, and we're getting a whole bunch of injection of younger talent too. We saw it last year with Sam Laporta and a few others. Mm-hmm. Brock Bowers should be a part of that. And look, if you don't have a top five or top seven tight end in a lot of ways, then you're almost chasing points among tight ends. And in redraft, you can kind of punt that at sections. For me, Brock Bowers, the ascension into top five, top seven at the position is very clear. And again, I would be willing to make him a top eight selection. And if you already have a quarterback, then I think you can push Rome Odunze and Brock Bowers ahead of this list.
Do you know if he's like going after this list in the consensus dynasty ranking, or is this kind of the conversation? Because I can see opinions being very split on him this at this point, just because he went to the Raiders.
I have seen people be very terrified of the situation.
Okay, yeah, I think the playing it in the middle ground, like you did here, is appropriate.
Okay, let's get into tier three. And for me, that is Bo Nix, the first player of the third tier. I see him going earlier mid round two in Superflex Dynasty drafts, and he's my ninth overall player listed here. I don't get it. He's going to be the starter. In fact, let's hear from his new head coach, Sean Payton.
Pay close attention to all the film study and you know, obviously he's played a lot of football, but you know, sack differential, turnover differential, accuracy, third down passing, first in this class, first in end of half, first in end of game, 2-minute situation, second in red zone. A lot of those other things that, and then let's do another passing statistic and remove a lot of the short underneath throws. And obviously that's part of what they do offensively, and you remove that and you come back with the analytics and it's still first. And
he stole your notes, Hayden.
He did. What can go wrong here? Yeah, I love this just because it is true. Like 97th percentile EPA per play among drafted quarterbacks. That's Bo Nix. It's hard to do that. I don't care how old you are in the Power Five, especially when we know his number one wide receiver doesn't go until the fourth damn round in the draft. And then when you remove the screens and the RPOs, he's still number one in all of these metrics. So something's got to give here, and I think this is the perfect opportunity for Bo Nix to play. I think he's going to start week one immediately, and then we'll see what they do. I think they're not going to completely dump Bo Nix going into next year. They're going to try to surround him with wide receivers and stuff. So you're going to get like 2-4 years at the very least to me of somebody that's going to be starting games. And Sean Payton, when things are running right, fast pace, get the ball out and really start racking up a bunch of stats. And to me, just looking at like 45 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, like, are we sure that this guy is terrible? I don't know.
So JJ Zacharyson had a great podcast episode on quarterback values after the rookie years. Oftentimes they, you know, go up, they appreciate, right?
Yep.
But in fact, even the ones that had rough rookie seasons, you still have a window to sell if you want to. Like round one quarterbacks are still going to start their second season in the NFL, no matter what. And fantasy managers are desperate for a starting quarterback in Superflex leagues. So if you take him at the top of round two, I think the worst outcome you're going to get here is you're going to be able to sell him for a second round pick next at the same time. And the upside is you're going to get a guy that who was should have been at the top of this tier, again, the ninth overall selection. And I firmly believe that Sean Payton has zero patience left and that this is his guy. Yep. And that he is going to start and we are going to see production out of it. I would just understand how the value of the quarterback in the Superflex league is going to be greater than a lot of the wide receivers or tight ends or running backs that are going to be drafted mm-hmm. after him. So even if you don't need a quarterback here, I would still be taking Bo Nix and trying to flip that if you wanted to for next year draft capital.
I think it's really smart. I think the other thing is people knew about Bo Nix and his struggles going back to Auburn. And I think that people get take locked onto that. And he's kind of become a meme because of how many bad decisions he was making at Auburn. Those completely evaporated for two seasons in an offense that was not like completely littered with first round talent like some of the other quarterbacks on this list. So in terms of the production profile, and I think that he's a little bit better of an athlete than people want to give him credit for as well. I think this is like a lights out pick to make on top of just him retaining the value long term.
My 10th player, Ladd McConkey, wide receiver for the LA Chargers. He's another one who's on like this fringe round one, sometimes fall into a few picks of round two.
That surprises me.
Wow. I mean, it's shocking to me, Hayden. Like the number one thing that Jim Harbaugh has said about Ladd McConkey is that the quarterback knows where he's going to be and he is precise. Who else can you say that on the Chargers wide receiver roster that is locked in beyond this season? No one. I mean, to me, he instantly comes in and he's the best wide receiver on the team.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to run the ball a lot and they've invested a lot on the offensive line. But also, what is one of Ladd McConkey's best routes? The out route, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where is Justin Herbert?
Lasers
to the sideline. Like, I think he and Ladd are just going to be instantly on the same page. And this mm-hmm. is, again, a new regime that this is their only investment. And they surely are not tied to anyone else so far.
And this is probably going to be a regime that's not going to completely go back to the well, drafting more and more wide receivers, especially because Ladd's profile, he can win deep from the outside and then can go kick into the slot and go with like the classic option routes, slant routes, those type of things as well. So he just might be their chess piece for many, many years to come. And I know it's not the same exact offense, but like Keenan Allen finished 7th overall in fantasy points last year, 31st overall the year prior to that as Justin Herbert's number one guy. So I'm shocked. I don't even know what the case would be against Ladd McConkey to not have him in this tier. I guess it would just be kind of size paired with his injury history. Production, but all these guys.
The question is production too. And Hayden, I would refer those people to Ladd McConkey had to do the dirty work so Brock Bowers could get a lot of the easy work, to be honest. Like Bowers had 30 screens back in last season. Ladd McConkey had 7. In 2022, both had 21, but Bowers had 50 slot targets compared to just 25. Yeah. For Ladd McConkey, again, this is a true inside-outside player who's going to be out there. Like, I also think maybe the same people were attached to Quentin Johnson last year. If you're utilizing and thinking of Quentin Johnston when drafting Ladd McConkey, then that is an incredible addiction to the bit.
It really is. Also, by the way, number one in EPA per target, Ladd McConkey last year in the Georgia offense. Come on.
He plays with no fat in his game. I mean, his movements are so intentional. Yeah. Like
4.4 speed too.
I also think it's funny where I see like Roman Wilson's statistics and metrics highlighted and then Ladd McConkey's pushed down when those are now counterintuitive. When Ladd McConkey is in the offense where Roman Wilson had all of those numbers with a quarterback that is better and is going to be the primary passing target in that same environment. So like, hey, let's just shove it in this direction for Ladd and not think of it with Roman anymore.
Also, think about the guys he made get out of there. Adonai Mitchell, see you later. Jermaine Burton, scared to compete. All these guys couldn't sniff Ladd McConkey's jock.
He was the guy that all the Charger scouts targeted. They said he was a starter level grade. Guess what? He's going to be a starter unless injuries hit him. It's that simple. Okay. My 11th is Brian Thomas, the wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars. How they put it is that he is going to see more coverages, different defenses in the NFL. And those are the things as coaches we will scheme him up for. It's pretty easy to see what he did at LSU, and we'll get him in here to see what he can do in our offense. So Hayden, to me, that says we know that he can run hitches. We know where he can run goes. That might be the early stuff that we get him in on, but we're going to see how he bends, how he creates separation in his routes. I guess the big question is, this team runs some multiple tight end sets. Is that going to be Christian Kirk and certainly Gabriel Davis? And when they go into three wide receiver sets, like how early can Brian Thomas crack like an every single down roll?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's as a rookie. We'll see. I think that you and I viewed him slightly differently. I thought that there's a little bit more potential in it, like creating some branches to his route tree, but that's a little bit of a development. So we'll see how quickly that happens. Gabe Davis hasn't really concerned me. I know that Gabe Davis is going to be on the field a ton, but I think there's a chance that Brian Thomas is too good to remove himself from two wide receiver sets, even if he's not quite as good of a blocker as Gabe Davis, though. I think kind of depends, like Ladd McConkey versus Brian Thomas. Like, to me, that could be like half PPR versus full PPR between the two of them. But I think that his upside, like, this is still a hell of a tier.
Yeah. It's interesting. This team, I think, knows how to utilize their talents quite well, despite what happened to Calvin Ridley last year, because he was kind of forced into that. And they signed Gabriel Davis, again, this is just my opinion, to be the downfield X stuck along the sideline to kind of create more space underneath. And the underneath people were obviously going to be Christian Kirk and Evan Engram. But most importantly, the movement guy was going to be Calvin Ridley. We saw Brian Thomas in the past mostly work in that same straight line. But I wonder, again, if we have these roles, and I'm turning them very binary right now, if Brian Thomas is actually going to be tried out in kind of a movement way and get the ball in his hands a bit more often, which is, again, very, very, very different than what we saw him at LSU. But it could work. His athleticism is definitely there.
Yeah. I think long term, he's going to be a superstar.
By the way, if your rankings are different, let us know in the comments down below. I'm sure there are. And also, while you're here, hit that subscribe button. Thumbs up. We appreciate everyone that has joined us during NFL draft season. We have so much more of a best ball summer and fantasy football summer ahead over the next coming months.
We had, I think, like 200,000 new viewers this month. So if you're new to the channel, subscribe to us. We'll be dumping out fantasy football content for a very, very long time.
Okay. Number 12, I have Panthers running back Jonathan Brooks. This is another name that I see bouncing into round two quite often in certain leagues out there. Let's hear from actually Panthers head coach Dave Canales.
First and foremost, you know, our system calls for a back that could be used, of course, just in a traditional way, hand it to him. Then how can we get this player in space, being able to get him in perimeter screens, check downs. We got a really cool empty package where we use the backs, flex them out to get matchups, things like that. You know, he's a bigger back. He's got range. There's so much that he brings from a versatility standpoint. That's probably the biggest thing that stood out. And then just vision, patience, contact balance, acceleration. Like, he's got it all. He's the best back in this class, and we were so fired up to just be able to bring him in and create that competition that Dan talked about.
It's pretty simple. I mean, I think Jonathan Brooks, I know he's coming off an ACL, is going to be the primary running back for this team early. I mean, think about it. Chuba Hubbard, final year of his contract. Miles Sanders, they can't wait to get rid of him because of Deuce Staley and Frank Reich and Scott Fitterer and all that type of stuff. And as Dave said, checklist, this is exactly what we talked about, Jonathan Brooks. He's a check by almost everything except ridiculous explosion.
Which is fine. You have to get to the third level to get there. And I think that he's not bad in that metric. Nope. I think he's
almost one speed.
When Canales was talking through that, like, immediately you're just like, Rashad White, he was an RB1 last year and like not the best environment. Like, I think that Jonathan Brooks should be a first rounder all day long. And the reports, and this has been the kind of the drumbeat, even going back to around the combine, he's aiming for July 1st, and he's on track to be ready for contact on July 1st. So I'm not ruling out the first snap of the Panthers season being Jonathan Brooks as the RB1.
I mean, Canales also said that running the ball is non-negotiable. This team's going to run the ball. I mean, they just signed two guards to massive money on top of that. And again, Brooks, smooth, powerful, efficient decision maker, has dynamic movements when he needs them, strong movements when called upon. I think people are underestimating how involved Jonathan Brooks is going to be immediately on this team. Next, still in this tier, the last name, number 13, Xavier Worthy, wide receiver, Kansas City Chiefs. Worthy, I think, is going to impact this team more in like real football than maybe week to week production in fantasy football in terms of just volume of targets, because we've talked about this. His speed with Marquise Brown, they haven't really had that, especially with two players at the same time. And that kind of allows, to me, the volume opportunistic ones over the middle of the field to create more space for them in Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice when he comes back. But that's not to say that I'm not a fan of Xavier Worthy's game. I absolutely am. I think he is tougher than people give him credit for. He's more of a dog, and he's more willing to work over the middle of the field than I think people, when they see a 4-2-1-40, would expect.
Yeah, and Hollywood's going to be here for one season. They're not going to be able to afford him. And then Travis Kelce, he got this like 2-year extension. But if you actually look at it, it's basically just a 1-year raise. And they throw some extra money on there, but it's all player option. So we'll see if Travis Kelce wants to hang around after this season as well. So if you get rid of those two guys, it's just him versus Rashee Rice. And for my money, I think Xavier Worthy is a tier above Rashee Rice in terms of just how talented they are. So we'll see how it goes. Lots of mouths to feed this year. But I think long term, all of a sudden, you're going to clear out two of the four names that we're dealing with. And I think that Xavier Worthy has this tempo, pacing, start ability. And Andy Reid obviously knows how to use this type of weapon. So I think long term, this is going to be a smash success for the Chiefs.
Yeah. And obviously, when Andy Reid and DeSean Jackson had some great moments, there was less too high cover two looks. And so you could get those one-on-ones a bit more often. Did love that Andy Reid said that Xavier Worthy loves football and he can run all day. And I'm sure he was looking for that when evaluating wide receivers compared to the Kadarius Toney and other wide receiver experiments that they've had recently. I don't even think when he mentioned wide receivers, he even brought up Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney's name one time. Like, I think that they have moved past and they're a distant memory this offseason.
Yeah, the bit of calling Kadarius Toney the most talented wide receiver on the team for the third straight year was going to start bombing.
Okay, start of tier four, 14th overall pick for me. Michael Penix Jr. It goes back to what we were talking about with quarterbacks, right? And the value they bring. And this is a tricky one, more tricky than Bo Nix for sure. And like, if you don't want to wait a year or two and just to let that go by, totally just bypass this pick. Totally. I can't escape though, Hayden, the 8th overall selection. And I understand $100 million guaranteed, but like, I would be stunned if he does not get starts in 2025.
Yeah, this one makes me nervous. I also, like, on top of just like the fit in terms of compared to Kirk Cousins, I also thought Michael Penix was a second round guy. Like, that was just my evaluation.
Well, they think he's awesome.
I understand that, but I think that most people thought that he was more of a second round type, and I'm not sure if he has like the we haven't seen him translate his athletic traits into like where the fantasy points are, and it's really hard for me to tell, like, okay, let's say it's 2025, 2026. Like, who the hell is going to be coaching? Who's going to be around him at that point? So, yeah, I think if you're desperate for quarterbacks, I would understand rolling the dice. But
to me, it's not even desperation necessarily. It's almost more of an investment, I think, because we've talked about how the contract, to me, basically puts Michael Penix Jr. as a starter in 2026, right? So, like, that is the target. Stuff can happen in between there when Michael Penix gets starts or just balls out in the preseason, like he's almost certainly going to be the starter in preseason games this year. And I want to add, every single player we're going to talk about after this has like at least one flaw, if not more than that. And again, I think in super flex drafts, if Michael Penix does not play this year, and if you are set at quarterback, I think someone's going to have in their mind, because they're desperate, of, oh, I can invest in Michael Penix in the 2025 offseason because then I'm going to have a starter the next year. So again, you're going to have to spend, and I've seen him go late second round, maybe a late to mid second round pick here for, again, earlier picks the following year, or you just keep him. Mm-hmm. And I think you have a starter in 2026 at the very latest.
The other pessimistic angle that I just thought about is, what happens if things go sideways the next 2 years and Terry Fontenot's fired, Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris, they're also fired. Then all of a sudden, this new regime's like, why do we care about Michael Penix again? So this is a very complicated one. So we'll see if there's any other names that intrigue me.
Well, that is extremely pessimistic for a coach and an offensive coordinator that have not even been on the field at the same time so far.
Well, yeah, all of a sudden Arthur Meigs gets less patient.
Okay.
Once the Kirk Cousins experience dries up, we'll see what happens there.
My second player in the fourth tier is Panthers wide receiver Xavier Leggett. Let's again hear from head coach Dave Canales on how they plan to use him.
First of all, just the athletic traits, right? Just like height, weight, speed, you know, 6'1", 221, 439, you know, really balanced hands. That's a pretty good start. You know, then you look at the versatile ways that the Gamecocks were able to use him out of the backfield. Jet sweeps, short crossers, perimeter screens, down the field posts. There really isn't much else we do with receivers. He's done it all.
So I know that Bryce Young is not Patrick Mahomes, But I think that Xavier Leggett's rookie season is going to be very similar to Rashee Rice's, plus more downfield routes on top of it.
Yeah, that's how I kind of used him. He's not Deebo Samuel, but they would use him in Deebo Samuel-ish ways back in college, and he's at least has the size and the speed to make do on that. So, yeah, this is a very boom-bust selection. Like, this is, like, to your point with Michael Penix, like, this thing could easily fall out in two ways that Leggett just – he wasn't able to – work on his hands enough, wasn't able to polish up with his route running, or Bryce Young doesn't pan out over the next couple of years, or he's 221 pounds and run 4.39. Everything really clicks there. So this is the boom bust tier. I think there's a huge drop off to me from the B tier of players that you listed into the C tier.
Again, shallow crosses, post routes. I mean, this past year, if you go back and watch the North Carolina game or a whole bunch of others, sensational contested catch, because he just out athletes every other player across from him. Mm-hmm. They have a plan for this. I mean, Dave Canales was with DK Metcalf when he came into the league. I'm not saying that Xavier Leggett is going to be DK Metcalf, but at least we saw DK Metcalf early in his career, and Canales was there for the entire time, have certain roles and just certain aspects and limit him to what he can do. And then we saw it expand from there, you know?
Yeah.
Again, not saying that they are going to end up being the same player, but I think the pathway has already been cleared and trailed that they're going to utilize Xavier Leggett in the same way.
To me, it's also like, that's a good understanding of the prospect he is. I think like that makes me a little bit more confident. Like, they have a plan. They understand his pros and his cons, and not just like completely dreaming about the upside at all times.
16th, Trey Benson, running back, Arizona Cardinals. He's a playmaking running back. Speed, versatility, power. They said he's a big man who can run fast.
He is.
From Jonathan Gannon, can you break tackles? Yes. Can you make people miss? Yes. Can you hit home runs? Yes. He does all of these things. And I don't think James Conner is going anywhere in 2024 unless he gets injured, which we have seen him do in the past. And then in 2025, and heck, parts of 2024, Trey Benson can be the home run hitter for this offense that, again, Drew Petsing designed and now has already added another piece in Marvin Harrison Jr. Explosive players are tough to come by, and he might be one of their most explosive players.
Yeah, this is somebody I probably would slide ahead Penix personally, just because after this year, he's going to be the established guy. Now, the con to Trey Benson's game is he has never been like a true bell cow. He's always been with somebody. So we'll see if he's able to handle that. Obviously, he's coming off of this humongous knee dislocation, but it's many years past him. He's still an incredible athlete. Best quads and legs in the draft, no question about it. And I think that long term, him and Kyler, this could be a pretty fun combo. And there's a chance James Conner goes down. This offense was hammering runs to James Conner last year. He's like a top 40 player overall. So I think that even for this year, there is some contingent upside, but I think long term, he will be the foundation back.
17th rookie for dynasty drafts for me, Bills wide receiver Keon Coleman. I know for many, he'll top the tier right here. I want to listen to what Brandon Bean said their plan for him is, and then let's talk about it.
It's all ball, and I think Josh knows that we're going to need him to get up to speed, and we're going to be counting on him early in his role. Sometimes you're bringing in rookies, and you're just saying, hey, you know, barring injury, you're probably not going to start, you know, help us on special teams or something else like that. In this case, you know, it's no secret we needed to add, you know, a guy like him to fill this X role that's vacant. And so that's part of what you're considering. And you know, we're not going to try to push him too fast, but we're going to press him. And we think we got good guys in the room.
So two sides of that. One, he's going to play early.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and
he's super young, but he's going
to
play early. Two, I hear X, a role that we have to fill. I get nervous about Keon Coleman down the field creating separation, because it was already a struggle at the college level. Based on our eyes, based on Matt Harmon's charting, based on whoever's watching him, it turned into a whole bunch of contested situations, which can go either way. And so that is concerning to me.
It is a little concerning. I would have liked him in the slot role, but the fallback, if you are going to play X receiver, doing it in Josh Allen's offense seems something I want to chase there. So he's going to be into like the Gabe Davis-ish role. And that was actually one of my comps if he was going to play this role. So we'll see how it goes. I think some of the contested catch stuff with Keon Coleman was a desperation out of the quarterback at Florida State, just heaving up passes that had no business going his way. So we'll see what things look like. All I know is if he does hit, you are going to love Keon Coleman, because what a hell of an interview and character that guy is. So we'll see. And then the fallback, maybe in a year from now when Curtis Samuel's out of there and they've given up on Khalil Shakir, maybe he kicks back inside a little bit more.
You are trying to break down an offense that was already broken down this offseason.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if he doesn't work out at X receiver, he can go kick back inside long term too. So we'll see what happens there. This guy has the alpha personality that we're looking for at this position.
Again, I just go back to, and I'm not talking about contested catch numbers. I'm not talking about any of this, just percentage-wise. There was a period where you caught one of 11, and he should have caught more of those in games 2, 3, 4 of last season. But just the, like, total lack of separation down the field. Like, can he? Because as Brandon Bean talked about, as you and I talked about in our pre-draft profile, we actually liked him earlier in routes more than later on in routes. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a lot of extended routes down the field and scramble drills, all that stuff. And maybe he can improve in that area, but it's just concerning to me of someone who didn't do it in college, then changing it and doing it in the NFL. Last name in this tier, 18th rookie for me, is Ricky Pearsall, who I loved pre-draft. You loved him pre-draft as well. My concern is that the 49ers were second to last in the league this past season in 11 personnel. At just 40%. Mm-hmm. And so we already know that with a 49ers team, when everyone is healthy, Debo, CMC, Ayuk, George Kittle, all of them can't hit. At least one of them is just going to sit out that game, basically, production-wise. And if all of them are in place and healthy in 2024, that means Ricky Pearsall is the fifth, and that means there's going to be very little production in that for me.
A couple outs, though. Debo Samuel is a trade candidate. I think this offseason is still on the table. Certainly next year when they're looking to pay Brandon Ayuk, trading Debo Samuel will become something 100%. That will definitely be at the top of the list. And then George Kittle is already 31 years old. We'll see how much longer where he's this true elite status. Same thing with Christian McCaffrey, who's not some young guy as well. So for this year, if nobody's trading stuff, it's going to be a problem for Ricky Pearsall. But
the sun is out. The birds are chirping. We know what that means. Spring is here. Summer is around the corner. And that means long days outside at the pool, working out, walking the dog, chasing the kids, which means at the end of the night, you crash, you relax in front of the television. But there's only one problem. You've watched everything you wanted to on whatever streaming platform you use. Here's the solution. Surfshark VPN. It allows you to virtually travel the world from the comfort of your own home with a tap of the finger. You can check out the content you can stream in Spain, in England, in Costa Rica, larger libraries than what is afforded at your current location. Everything you do online stays private when you use a VPN from Surfshark. So get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/underdog. Enter promo code underdog for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. That is 3 extra months for free. Can't see YouTube video because of your location? Use Surfshark VPN. Can't access that one website to buy limited edition sneakers? Use Surfshark VPN. Again, that is surfshark.deals/underdog.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
In 2 years from now, you could be the number two receiver for an established Brock Purdy that's not going to go anywhere. Kyle Shanahan's not going to go anywhere. And at that point, I think that Ricky Pearsall has plenty enough juice to be a slot wide receiver. But I do think that he's kind of on that fringe because he is so good with ball tracking and speed that maybe he could be a vertical guy as well. I saw him got pushed around a little bit out there. But I think for the most part, in 2 years from now, 3 years from now, just knowing I'm going to tank this rookie season for that upside later could be worthwhile.
Yeah. Again, I think he's later in this list because you almost certainly are going to get a tanked rookie year unless something happens like what you're suggesting. Yep. I love Ricky Pearsall. I think they want him to be a 2 wide receiver set player. Yep. And it would be fascinating to move on from Debo, who, again, zone numbers are fantastic. What he does in this offense, no one exactly will be able to replicate. But if that's the case, then you have two man-to-man beaters in Brandon Ayuk and Ricky Pearsall. And maybe that is the vision that Kyle Shanahan wants to have moving forward for the 49ers offense.
That would make sense. He's good enough for that.
He is. Okay. Tier five. We start off with 19th ranked player. For me, that's Jalen Polk, now of the New England Patriots. Again, I want to mention that he and Javon Baker have been working out together this whole process. They did a couple throwing sessions with Drake May. For me, Polk, really tough, strong, competitive, even after the catch, can run all the routes inside and outside. They said do everything. They spent time with him at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, so they didn't need to bring him in for a visit. Robert Woods is the example I'm going to keep bringing up over and over. And I think a Robert Woods-esque player attached to Drake May, that's slightly different than Josh Downs, but you can see the vision. And Josh Downs was extremely productive attached to May during their 2023 season at UNC. 2022, excuse me.
And I viewed Polk as a very high floor prospect as well. So if we can get Robert Woods upside with one of the highest floor second round wide receiver prospects of the last couple of years, I think that's worthwhile. Obviously, you have to kind of parlay this with Drake May's got to be good and Jalen Polk's got to be good. But at this point, I think that we're both pretty confident that Polk's a player and we think that Drake May's a player as well. And there's that room still, like Kendrick Bourne, Juju, all these guys. It's not a whole lot to compete with over there.
No, he should be playing immediately. I mean, that is his game. We thought like it should translate exactly what he did at the college level goes straight to the NFL. Okay, next for me, Adonai Mitchell, wide receiver.
All right.
From the Colts. All he has to do is be better than Alec Pierce. And he's also so much better in the red zone. In fact, let's hear head coach Shane Steichen talk about him.
Rare ability to separate at the top of routes. He's got an arsenal of releases. First press man, you can see it show up on tape. I mean, the guy had 11 touchdowns. I think he averaged 14.4 yards a catch. The guy's a competitor. To get him where we got him, I couldn't be more fired up about it. And hats off to Chris and his staff. To add to that room with Pittman and Downs and Alec and Ashton and the rest of those guys, he's going to bring that speed element and that big playability too as well.
We think Shane Steichen's a good coach, Hayden. He loves him. AD Mitchell.
I mean, they play really fast. And Anthony Richardson, they know that they want to throw the ball way downfield. And he's the answer. Like Josh Downs can do that at times. Michael Pittman can do that at times. But Adonai Mitchell, that is his bread and butter, is winning down the field. And we've seen it at flashes. The releases are one thing. The ability to break out of his breaks is another thing, that maybe there's a guy that can turn into a true number one, somebody that could be the first read on RPOs once he kind of gets more established and Michael Pittman kind of phases out of this offense. So a boom bust just because he's a first round guy that went round two. We can see where this slope could end up at, but the peak of Adonai Mitchell to me would be better than Ricky Pearsall, Xavier Leggett, and Jalen Polk in this type of tier. So you're kind of paying for it. And I think that there's enough volume in this offense because Shane Steichen wants to play so fast, where even if he is the number two behind Michael Pittman for the first couple of years, that still could be enough, especially in half PPR.
I forgot this, but Reggie Wayne is their wide receivers coach. They believe Reggie Wayne's a great match for him to help him kind of acclimate to the NFL. And I love this. They're not expecting him to be Superman right away. We've talked about a bunch of receivers that have to be the primary or secondary option. I mean, Adonai Mitchell can be the third, do what you do really well, put work in the lab, figure out what the NFL cycle is all about. And then in year two, if you hit the ground running and you are somewhat of a different player, or, you know, the final 3 or 4 weeks of your rookie season two, we could start seeing like a real liftoff. Cause I think the talent definitely is there for that.
And this is also another way to get exposure to Anthony Richardson too, who you and I believe could be an MVP candidate very soon.
Very soon. 21st rookie for me, Jermaine Burton, wide receiver, Cincinnati Bengals. Let's hear from his head coach, Zach Taylor.
Play strength matter, especially, you know, in our division, you don't get a lot of free access, you know, the way this division plays out. And so there's plenty of guys that with clean air out there can run fast, go track down the field. We need guys that can play physical and create separation and have strong hands to catch point. And you want to talk about Jermaine specifically, you can see him run all sorts of routes from all positions. You see him make contested plays on the field. You see him run away from people down the field. You see no drops on tape this year. Didn't see a single one. And you saw run after the catch. You saw great scramble awareness, getting phased with the quarterback and create big plays on scrambles. And so I just think that he's got the ability to really add to the competition in that room. I'm really excited. We obviously have two set in stone starters with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And now we've got, you know, Jermaine and Andre and Charlie that we took last year, Trent Irwin, who has always continued to find roles and ways to help us with his team. And then there's the guys behind them as well, you know, and so it's just a really deep room. There's going to be opportunity for all those guys, and I'm excited to see how it all plays out.
These head coaches are stealing your notes, Hayden.
Jermaine Burton, I swear, this guy, if he hits, he's really going to hit. And what a perfect landing spot. TJ Houshmandzadeh announcing the pick is his mentor, obviously going to Cincinnati, is going to help him there. Go learn under Joe Burrow. The structure of this locker room is right there. And T. Higgins, he's not going to be a Bengal after this year, just the way the Bengals view their contract situation. They're just not going to be able to afford the guaranteed money for T. Higgins. So if Jermaine Burton is as good as I think he is and as Zach Taylor thinks he is, then Jermaine Burton can be Joe Burrow's number two target next year. I mean, that is as clean of an upside path as possible. And I think that he nailed it in terms of the scouting profile. He can win deep, very fast, reliable hands down there. Ball tracking was good. But to me, there was a couple times where he would catch an in-breaking route and absolutely truck the safety and then walk into the end zone. So there's a little bit more physicality to this vertical-only profile that I'm definitely intrigued with.
So can I throw a scenario out there?
Please.
Let's say Jalen Polk fell to the third round and he was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals. I would be more in on immediate production from Jalen Polk than I am for Jermaine Burton. Because sure. This, and who knows what they're going to do with Ja'Marr Chase. Like, we have seen him move around quite a bit more, especially with Joe Burrow's injury in, you know, recent years and just how defenses were playing them. At points, it felt like we just got like two outside wide receivers with Tyler Boyd in the slot. And again, they moved Ja'Marr Chase around a bit more often. But like, Jermaine Burton and Tyler Boyd are just very different types. So we're going to have to see almost a transition of that third wide receiver from this team that I think someone like Jalen Polk would have fit in better for that. So I think Jermaine Burton, outside of splash plays, should be viewed more as a 2025 selection, more so than a 2024 one.
But I think in like the second round of rookie drafts, you're not looking to start these guys as rookies all the time. So I think that there's definitely room for him to sit on your bench for this year and figure it out later. But I think that compared to like, if you're a guy that's really into draft capital, like Jermaine Burton getting third round draft capital to me is a massive win. There was DMs that were thinking that he could fall out of the draft completely because so many teams had him off the board. Like the fact that he got a third round draft capital is to me a massive sign for him. He has much more upside than the classic third round pick.
Okay. 22 for me is actually the running back three. The fourth in this tier, it's Blake Corum, Rams running back. This is a high ranking compared to probably consensus out there. And it's not because I think he's destined to replace Kyren Williams outright. It's because the Rams view him as a similar player to Kyren Williams. In fact, let's hear from Sean McVay on that.
Me, one of the things that jumped off is there's a lot of traits that reminded me of Kyren Williams. You know, obviously I love Kyren and he's been so important and just, you know, the human being, but then also when you just look at the way he works at it, the production and the things that he was able to bring to our offense last year, and even really some of the things that he worked through his rookie year. And I think there's a lot of similarities. Obviously, Kyren will put Blake under his arm and be a great mentor and a kind of a leader. But Ron Gould was really excited about him. Mike LaFleur, I obviously loved his game. And so he's got a bunch of, you know, tape to be able to evaluate. He's been a part of an incredibly successful program.
So I don't think that this is an indication that the Rams are just going to move on from Kyren Williams. And I think some people might interpret it that way. Sean McVay loves him, some Kyren Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And if the money's right, though, I think they'll bring him back after this rookie deal. But man, just visualizing what Blake Corum did at Michigan of being concise with his footwork, zero fat to his movements, picking up the yards blocked for him, running under center, an NFL-style offense. Again, if something happens to Kyren or just spelling him for this year in an offense that is awesome, I wanted to be ahead of the public on someone like Blake Corum here.
I mean, what is the public thinking? That's my question here. Kyren Williams was the second best fantasy asset last year, period. If he's out for a couple games this next year, we will all be ranking Blake Corum as a top 10 running back. So if that upside, like he'll be a top 20 overall asset for chunks of the season. If that comes in the fantasy playoffs, all of a sudden you've hit absolute jackpot. And Kyren Williams, as much as we love him, he's not like the superstar runner out there as well. And he's tiny and he handles a lot of work, so he can easily break down. And I've watched Blake Corum touch the ball 35 times a game as well. So we know that he can handle a workload as well. So like for me, the second where I'm like, I'm not going to be starting these guys as a rookie, what's the upside path? I would rather take the lottery ticket of that Blake Corms could be. And I think that the evaluation is exactly right. Like his vision, instincts, decision-making, especially in this downhill rushing style. And if that's where you look at what the McVay was doing and the free agency that they have with their offensive linemen, like this fits, like player to team fit could not be more ideal for Blake Corum.
In fact, and I know people don't like to draft running back insurance or handcuffs on their own roster in redraft. If you have Kyren Williams on your dynasty roster, getting Blake Corum just means you have that entire backfield. So if something does happen to one of them, you're getting someone who is going to get 20 plus touches any given week.
Yep. Yeah. The only downside here is that Matthew Stafford could be gone the next 2 years. Oh. And we'll see if McVay wants to hang around after that as well. But I think like for this year, like there could be a week where you and I talk about him as the running back six. And that's hard to find this late in the draft.
Jalen Wright is up next as my 23rd rookie. Simply put, Hayden, I think that this is the Raheem Mostert replacement after this year. It certainly clouds Devon Achane's opportunity projection this year because it turns a two-person backfield into a three-person because, you know, we can throw Jeff Wilson to the wind. But I would be stunned if Jalen Wright carves out a massive role this year. But let's look ahead to an offense that utilizes speed and is able to package that and find perfect ways for it. And the Miami Dolphins and Jalen Wright is a good fit in that department.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They gave up a lot to make sure that he was on the roster as well. So the draft capital is a little bit later than I think some people wanted for, but he got bailed out by the perfect landing spot. And then some of our film evaluations just get minimized because of the offense that he goes to. Just kind of get point and shoot and let the speed take over.
24, Patriots wide receiver Javon Baker. If he comes in, has a good OTAs, good camp, he's almost certainly their starting X wide receiver. He is already good at creating separation. He's a dog after the catch. He makes difficult grabs. Again, he had throwing sessions with Drake May already. This is a pretty big gap compared to Jalen Polk, Adonai Mitchell, Jermaine Burton, and then putting two running backs. So it's almost like a mini tier inside of this tier. But I was also a fan of Baker's at UCF.
He's got upside for early fourth round pick. And I am with you. If you look at the Patriots depth chart, there's a lot of names there, but a lot of guys that you want the flanker role or inside in the slot. There's not many guys you're like, all right, this guy's going to be the guy to go face press man coverage and win. And we'll see if Javon Baker's going to be able to do that. A little bit inconsistent to me, but the flashes are there. And like, this is the specific role that he played at Alabama and at UCF. So I can envision the upside. I am with you that he has more traits than like the classic fourth round pick.
I will say he and the next two names, I think it is dependent on what position you need. And I'll get to that here with the next name in Marshawn Lloyd, the running back with the Green Bay Packers, who I think is DeAndre Swift-ish, but with less draft capital, with worst draft capital. I think he brings a different element to this offense, some big plays probably, maybe some Tyjae Spears stuff to Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry. What are your thoughts here? Because the Packers gave so much to Josh Jacobs, even when they had Aaron Jones. So they're obviously committed to him at a high level. Mm-hmm. But Marshawn Lloyd brings a totally different element than like A.J. Dillon or really any other back that they've had on this roster.
Yeah, he's going to be more of the lightning style. And I think that A.J. Dillon, we should pretend like he's not even part of this.
Same.
I think that if Jacobs goes down, it'll be Marshawn Lloyd. So we'll see. The good news with him is he's attached to Jordan Love in this offensive line in LaFleur for long term. And that to me is going to be a top five-ish offense for like the next 4 or 5 years. So I think he's in a good spot for like touchdowns and stuff. And he's got the size to make do on it. And maybe it's not the worst thing to go learn under Josh Jacobs, who's one of the best decision makers, really reliable physical rusher. Maybe Marshawn Lloyd can take a couple of notes for the first year or two anyways.
From LaFleur, quote, gives us a different flavor out of the backfield in one-on-ones. He can be a weapon out of the backfield, can run routes out of there. Gutekunst was asked about his fumbles. Fumbles were not an overly concerning thing for us. We view it as correctable. They did an analytic study of hand size and fumbles, and that does not track. They are not correlated.
It's all right.
Something to think about.
Shout out to
we'll
nerds.
See when he fumbles what happens if LaFleur wants to keep him. Okay. I mentioned that it's depending on what position you might take. And that's because I have Washington Commanders tight end Ben Sinnott.
thought you were going to say a kicker.
No. I mean, question is, who is the tight end one in Washington? Like, this is exactly the type of profile we want to attack at the tight end position. Athletic, mid-round pick, and invest in that. When Adam Peters gets up there and says he reminds him of Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle and the way that he blocks, having the same mindset, you can line him up from any spot and ask him to accomplish his assignment as a blocker. And guess what? If you look at his athletic profile, if you look at his receiving skills at Kansas State, he can beat man coverage and he will be nasty after the catch. Mm-hmm. So it might not be in year one, but this is, again, the exact type of profile I love to bring in Dynasty ahead of ADP and wait it out a mm-hmm. year or two. And the upside is there.
Zach Ertz is on a 1 year, $2 million guaranteed contract. That's backup money there. So I think there's a path to starts as a rookie, especially Zach Ertz has been through a lot of injuries and definitely
didn't even play last year.
Right. So I think there's a chance that Ben Sinnott could be somebody that's in the mix. I just did my best ball rankings, which are live on Underdog Network, and he's in my late round tight end, like aggressive tier in the 170s. So not in the redraft leagues, but in like a little bit of a deeper league. I think that he's like straight up draftable this year on the app. Production's there, athleticism there. Almost like Kyle Juszczyk fullbacky vibes. I'm not sure if that's the number 34 jersey and like the way that they would kind of leak him out of the backfield, but he's kind of got this like creativity to his game. So hopefully Cliff Kingsbury is the one to unlock it.
Okay. Two more names on this tier. Troy Franklin is 27th for me. I was not the biggest fan of Troy Franklin at Oregon. I felt he really struggled in tight window targets, struggled in working through contact in his routes, struggled with physicality. The NFL agreed. I mean,
yeah.
I still think he was more valuable than a fourth round pick. I think the Broncos kind of mentioned that they had him a second round grade on him. It does help that Sean Payton's going to utilize him as more of a Z, more of a movement guy, as a vertical player. But I also think like that is quite different than a team viewing him as like a secondary piece of the passing game and spending a mm-hmm. second round draft capital on him.
Yeah, I would also throw in his hands and ball tracking was pretty hit and miss, which is very key for this position. So he's really young and he was still very productive despite those flaws. So I think that he should have gone late second, third round, somewhere in there. But the fourth round draft capital makes them where if he's not kind of balling out, he cannot see right. the field very often. There's Josh Reynolds, Cortland Sutton, Marvin Mims, Tim Patrick. Like, those aren't like incredible names, but I would not be surprised if he didn't see the field immediately. And remember, they traded up for Marvin Mims, so I don't think it's very good. But last year with earlier draft capital, I think they're going to be kind of competing for the same role. Like, it's undersized guys running fast as you can downfield.
This might shock you, but Troy Franklin's going ahead of a whole bunch of names before this. People are sticking to pre-draft evaluations more so than what they have in the past. I think
just can't do that. Can't do it. Got to make some adjustments.
Real quick, I should have said this earlier. Basketball Mania is here.
Oh, my goodness.
Drafting is here. It's in the app. It's in the lobby right now. If you've never played best ball, now is the time to do so. Producer Weave's going to throw a map on the screen. If you're in one of these yellow states and you've never played best ball before, you've only heard about it, you're like, what is this? Well, get in right now. Now is the time to do it. Click the link in the description. We will match a portion of your deposit that you put in so you can start drafting and then draft for the entire summer, because it's going to be an enjoyable venture for you.
I got to hit on a couple more notes with it. Best Ball Mania, $15 million in total prizes. First place gets $1.5 million. Very flat payout structure, which is very popular. We got a lot of good notes with that. We also have a $500 entry tournament called the Big Dog, which is a $1 million tournament. And then the Eliminator, which is a very fun. You get eliminated every single week, depending on how you finish all the way through the end. So it's a fantastic sweat out there, and more different contest types are coming. It's a big priority for us. More contest variety, price points. So right now we have a $10 tournament, a $25 tournament, a $500 tournament. We'll fill out the in-between as the season goes on. So truly never better time to be on the Underdog app than right
again,
now.
Again, I'm sure you've heard us blabbing about best ball. If you never played it, the summer of 2024 is the time to do it. It's that simple. Try it once. Okay. 28, Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Roman Wilson. The Falcons were last in the league in 11 personnel last season, Hayden, at 17%. Now, it's arguable if this team even has three starting wide receivers. And in fact, Arthur Smith, and that's the reason I brought up the Falcons last year, is because Arthur Smith is now calling plays for the Steelers. He has inside-out flexibility, a lot of instincts, high football character guy. Roman Wilson sees himself as Tyler Lockett. Expand his game to be inside-out flex. Quote, he's battle-tested on the interior parts on the field. So I think, again, as we talked about deep play action, one side of the field to the other, that is the name of his game. I have major questions on if he's going to be a legit two wide receiver set player, but you kind of have to be productive in Arthur Smith offense, I feel.
And I do think that he has kind of like the fringe traits to do it, depending on the offense. I would like to see him in the slot more, but Michigan was heavy two tight end sets, and he was out there for all the snaps in them. So, yeah, I think he does have a little bit of dog in him. He's not like the pristine route runner, in my opinion. He's got like, talk about like just catch radius compared to Tyler Lockett. It's like not even close to me. But this is going to be a heavy play action offense, deep crossing routes. And I do think that's kind of where his best traits line up, because he has like a run away from you speed, 4.39 or whatever it was. So yeah, in other offenses, I'd be like, he's not playing on the outside. In this one, I actually do think he's got a chance to do that, at least for this first year, because he's competing with Van Jefferson. I mean, come on.
Okay, I would do my best to trade everything to get into the top 28 overall selections, because to me, there's a massive tier drop after this. You are really just throwing darts on either situations or traits or what have you. So from here on out, this can be ranked in any order. But I did want to put it in an order for you. And it's going to start again with our tier six, 29th, Ray Davis.
Running I like back. This.
Yes. I mean, for the Buffalo Bills, who is the inside the 10-yard back? You know, as much as they put James Cook on the field last year and trusted him and was a very valuable member on this offense when Ken Dorsey was there and when Joe Brady was calling plays, they still took him out for Latavius Murray or Leonard Fournette in certain situations or Ty Johnson and others, you know? So it would be somewhat stunning to me if after we saw in the first two seasons of his career, James Cook then just develop into this also inside the 10-yard lines pounder where Brandon Bean got on the desk and said that he brings a violent and physical edge to the group. To me, that sounds like a touchdown score.
Yeah, this is like the exact role that you have to envision Ray Davis going into. The question is he good enough to be the Damian Harris or the Latavius Murray? And I didn't love his tape, being honest, but for this year, he's got the opportunity to do that unless some veteran gets in there. And that's kind of where we're on this list and why he's in this E tier is a veteran can go just supplant him immediately.
Totally.
That would not surprise me because I don't think he's that good. But if he's better than I think, which happens all the time, and he's in this role, then all of a sudden you are in this kind of touchdown or bust territory. And then also James Cook, very tiny guy getting a lot of touches. Like who knows how well he'll be able to like hold up long-term anyways.
Yeah, I was even just looking some running back free agents out there.
Yeah, there's other guys that would get cut. Jordan Mason.
Or if Kareem Hunt goes to this team, you know, then Ray Davis, we can knock him down a few. But we'll see. Yeah.
The available running backs right now are...
Or if they bring back Latavius. Like, again, 35-year-old Latavius.
Yeah, it's a good point. Oh, goodness.
For now, especially when Brandon Bean goes out there and like praises his pass protection, he was asked like the number one play that he remembers. And he's like, it was a pass protection thing. Hello. Yeah. That's a lot of trust and responsibility. So
yeah,
I'm in on Ray Davis, especially compared to others. Okay.
All right.
This is going to shock people. 30th overall, Giants tight end Theo Johnson. Again, who is a starting tight end for the New York Giants? Is it Daniel Bellinger, you know, or is it the mid-round athlete who has already blocked a ton, who, again, special tight ends are special athletes. He tested as one. This is the formula that it's not always going to pan out, but when it does, you have an extreme value on your hands at a position that has a bunch of middling, replaceable guys that when a profile hits, he's a differentiator. He's a difference maker at that spot.
Yeah, I think this is a sharp play there. I think that Daniel Bellinger, they've proven when they brought in Waller, they're looking for more than Daniel Bellinger at this point. I think that Theo Johnson gives you that upside. And there's a lot of freak athletes at tight end. They're like 235 pounds, like you said, at Penn State. Like this guy was hand in the dirt, wanting to push you out of the way in the ground game as well. So yeah, dart throws at tight ends. The hits look like this type of profile.
Yep. Take your shot. This is way ahead of ADP, I'm sure. Like Jadavion Sanders is being drafted like a full round ahead of Theo Johnson. But I am so into athleticism, as was the NFL during the NFL draft.
Yep.
And Theo Johnson should be drafted ahead, in my opinion, of Jatavion Sanders. Okay. Speaking of the Giants, 31st, running back Tyrone Tracy. This is simple. We do not run from ambiguous backfields. We run to them, especially with guys with like this statistical and athletic profile. I understand that he was the 32nd pick of the fifth round, but this backfield is Devin Singletary and no one else. I think Tyrone Tracy is a weapon. I understand so many reasons why he fell in the NFL draft. I was certain that a team was going to fall in love with him, but they did not. I think we're going to fall in love with him during preseason, and I could see him carving out a significant, maybe not significant is the right word, but a role in this offense and be super explosive.
Yeah, I mean, the explosive traits are there. The per touch numbers were fantastic in terms of breaking tackles, yards after the contact. He's not 200 pounds. Like, this guy is a little bit thicker than that. No tread on his tires as well. So for somebody that switched positions to get drafted at all, I think is something. And we're just drawing parallels between other backfields. We just did with James Conner and Damien Harris. Like, there's like a little bit of James Cook in the Tyrone Tracy profile. Talking about
this coaching staff. I'm taking it a step up from that. Like,
but just like Brian Daboll has seen this James Cook type be a value. And I think that, why not Tyrone Tracy? And like you said, I mean, the depth chart over there in New York City, it's not great.
As you said, no tread off his tires. And it was even more like versus statistical. When you watch him, like, you saw the vision, you saw the cutting. Like, he did not look like he's only played 1 year at running back.
Yeah. It's not easy to be at Purdue.
But if that's the case, again, I understand why he would last on the board for so long, but I can tell myself a story of a guy who's only been at the position for 1 year making good on bad draft capital.
Right.
You know, it's an unusual prospect, and sometimes that's unusual prospects hit.
You don't want your day three picks to be 6 foot, 200 pounds, and they look exactly like every other guy. You want them to be a cut from a different cloth, and maybe that we just overthought the whole damn thing.
32. Another sleeper for the people. Chargers running back Kimani Vidal out of Troy. So
sell me on this one, please.
Once again, do not run from ambiguous backfields. We run to them.
He can carry the rock, you know. He's done it very well during his career there. And he's got great vision, burst, excellent contact balance, strength. Like, he's not a tall back, but he's not a small back. You know, he's 215 pounds, I think, and just runs through arm tackles, can make guys miss. Take a hit, stay on his feet, great balance, strong, you know, like, guys, DBs closing on him, punch him, you know, with a stiff arm and just keep going. But just that, you know, competes, you know, and also offers something in the passing game as well. And when you watch him block, it's impressive. Like, he'll throw it up in there against a blitzing linebacker.
Vidal, fantastic on first contact. He reminded me a bit of like Boston Scott when going back and watching him. I know they have Gus Edwards, who is probably going to be the touchdown scorer, but I cannot see Gus Edwards being a goal line to goal line type runner. No. And I understand that they signed J.K. Dobbins. I think if they get anything out of J.K. Dobbins, it's possible. But just recently, we saw a team like the Kansas City Chiefs lean on Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round as a pick early on because he got his opportunity and he made the most of it. That's all we need in a backfield like the Chargers that is so up for grabs that for some reason didn't invest anything into it. And I just want to take a shot here with my 32nd ranked rookie.
Gus Edwards, no money guaranteed beyond this year. And this year's contract is like $3 million with nothing. And then J.K. Dobbins signed with the Chargers. It's a $1.6 million deal. And I have not seen any guaranteed money attached to that. And usually that's not a good sign. The agent wants to get the guaranteed money out there. So J.K. Dobbins could easily not make this roster. And he also catches some passes in J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards. That's not necessarily been their M.O.
33, Malachi Corley, Jets wide receiver. Got to say, don't like totally see the vision to trade up from 72 to 65 in the fourth round or the third round for.
Yeah.
They even said he has things to work on. It's clear where he wins. I mean, he's powerful after catch. He adds a different element versus their wide receiver core that they have. Angry runs. He makes defensive backs pay. But again, you bring this player in because he's a manufactured touch guy that wins after contact. And manufactured touch guys who win after contact have to be scripted plays, have to be design plays. And that typically doesn't lead itself to consistent, frequent, growing roles. And I'm just uncertain if he can grow his game beyond that.
And if you look at Dane Brugler's The Beast, he gets the official pro day numbers from them. He's not the freak athlete that people think he is. Like, he is, he's a mediocre athlete on top of that. So I saw the same thing. I think he has lots of things to work on as a real wide receiver. And is Aaron Rodgers in his first year going to trust some guy in development to get on the field? I'm not sure. So
other than like two or three manufactured touches a game, like I think that's maybe Malachi Corley's aspect to this offense.
I mean, unfortunately, like we talked, I think on our show about him, we brought up Amari Rodgers.
Yeah.
Do you think that Aaron Rodgers loved the Amari Rodgers experience in Green Bay?
Next, 34, 49ers running back Isaac Corindo from Kyle Shanahan. We wanted to add speed to the running back room. To me, he's basically a Elijah Mitchell second contract replacement.
Like, spot on.
You pay Christian McCaffrey a bunch of money, and then you just churn the backs behind him. And this is a fourth round investment that, again, they traded up for. So Grindo, he might not give you anything. He could also, as we have seen, shockingly get production and opportunity. Right. I did not love him as a runner in the first half of the season. I thought he grew into it in the second half because he's also, I think, a converted wide receiver. But in the passing game, he's reliable there too. Pass pro and as a receiver, I thought.
Yeah. Wasn't my favorite tape. Did not think he played as fast. He runs super upright. We'll see. Shanahan's hit rate at running backs, it's 50-50. So we'll see. If I had to pick one side, these would probably be the losing side, but at least there's upside.
35, Dolphins, I think sixth round wide receiver, Malik Washington. Let's hear from Mike McDaniel on this one.
Loved.
Zeroed in on it. Yeah, he's been bugging me to draft again the last couple of rounds.
That's an understatement. I've been seriously annoying towards him. Rookie year can be very productive. Pro, which I know you can immediately, because you're going to have the opportunity, and it can be as much as you want it.
You know, Mike McDaniel says and creates such interesting things, but then when he gets in the press conferences, he never says anything. Like, they asked him about Malik Washington. He said zero, just like he has to come in here and compete. It's more revealing, I think, in that phone conversation, the love he had for him versus the 12 minutes he spent in front of media.
So also another interesting profile, super late breakout, really tiny player, but very explosive. I believe like 42 in the vert. And I think there was a little bit of medical with him because he was kind of somebody that was like a third round pick projected, and definitely a boom bust third round pick, but him to fall to the sixth round to me is unexplainable unless there was an injury concern with him, which means that this sixth round draft capital could be like fake sixth round draft capital. And let's get real here. Like, it's Braxton Berrios and the boys over there as the third wide receiver. It's usually a rotation over there. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, these guys are in and out of the lineup. And he at least has like the burst to be, at worst case, all right, we just need to throw somebody in this position. I think that he kind of fits that mold more than your classic Braxton Berrios slot wide receiver.
Okay, just to finish this up, 36, Aldrick Estime at the Denver Broncos, the running back. Sean Payton called him a first and second down runner who was great after contact. Again, Sean Payton is not really tied to anyone but Jaleel McLaughlin in this backfield. I know he brought in Samaje Perine, but like Samaje Perine never
played. He can get cut. This year before the season starts.
Maybe Samaje Perine has gone to the Buffalo Bills, but they don't have any money either. Let's not forget they have no money.
Samaje Perine is probably not going to be that expensive. We'll figure it out. Yeah. I think that Estime is a decent player, but going to the Broncos, like, it's just for the Broncos offense to get serious, a lot of things have to click. Right. So this is like a three-leg parlay that we have to hit with Estime.
37. I actually have Jalen McMillan, the other wide receiver from Washington. He was a third round pick, I believe, by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Maybe fourth.
It's a lot. I even thought Trey Palmer was fine this past season. I'm optimistic. He was a third. Yeah,
third.
You know, Jim McMillan was one of these players that like had his fan base during draft season. So I went in and watched him. I thought he was interesting. I also think there's a Jalen McMillan in every single draft class, and that's why he's this far down the list.
Yeah, we'll see how the new offense wants to utilize these guys. I think he's probably going to be the number four because I think that Trey Palmer is a little bit more exciting to me than Jalen McMillan. But yeah, we're at that tier, like you said. You warned us.
Okay, 38, Luke McCaffrey. I have nothing to say about Luke McCaffrey. Then Will Shipley here at 39 to the Philadelphia Eagles. Their running back, they called him, has an ability to make guys miss, throw out of the backfield, can line up all over the field. He had a 4.0 GPA because he wants to beat people's ass in academics as well. They said that. And then I'm closing out with Bucky Irving, running back, who's going to displace Chase Edmonds with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Right. And then 41, Jatavion Sanders. Again, understand that Jatavion Sanders was the first pick of the fourth round and went ahead of another tight end I talked about. But I think he's a super limited athlete who's supposed to win at athletic things at the tight end position. I shouldn't say super limited. I should just say average athlete who's supposed to win at extreme athletic spots at the tight end position.
I think he's more, if he gets lucky, he's Dalton Schultz-y. Like, I don't think that he's going to be anything beyond that athletically. I will say Luke McCaffrey.
I think Brevin Jordan is a perfect comparison for him.
Yeah, he's very productive. We thought he was going to be a better athlete. Really wasn't. Luke McCaffrey, I think, is going to start immediately. Whoa. Who else in the slot? I mean, who else do they have? Like, it sounds crazy, but he put up crazy numbers talking about.
I just didn't really like him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Commanders did go in third round with them.
This might be dumb. I think part of it is Adam Peters just spent so much time with Christian McCaffrey.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
That he's like, we'll I need see. To get me one of these.
Yeah. And then I thought Will Shipley, if something happens to Saquon Barkley, I think Will Shipley would get a lot of touches.
Wow.
He's better than Kenny Gainwell.
So you want to move Will Shipley higher up this list, I'm sure. You want to put him ahead of like Malachi Corley.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I just when you brought up Jalen McMillan, I was like, oh, this list is over. And then just you threw in those two guys. I think that I'd rather take upside swings with.
I like this through 41 actually than I did last year through 41. I was looking back at some like fourth round rookie draft picks last year in Dynasty, and it was brutal. Really brutal.
And if you look at there's some big boards out there for the 2025. Like no quarterbacks in the first round or one or two, and they're ranked in the 20s. There's a couple wide receivers, but there's not like some stud running backs either. So like, if you can flip future picks for this year's picks, I don't hate that either.
Real quick, we liked Johnny Wilson a lot heading into the draft. Johnny Wilson ended up being a sixth round selection. Mm-hmm. Howie Roseman saw what we did. He was questioned if he should move to tight end, which by the way, the Eagles have like taken big wide receivers and kind of shifted them to tight end or just big bodies and tried them out tight end. Howie said no. He ran the full route tree. All of his production came outside. He is unusual. Speaking to that unusualness, I go and watch all these interviews too. Okay. Johnny Wilson did not do an interview after being picked, which is on my radar.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I like the unusual things. Something we keep talking about. If you're going on day three, I want you to be a weird profile. And at least Johnny Wilson has that. And it's Javonte Parker that he's competing with out there. We'll see if he can get onto the field. It's not looking good, though.
as Howie said, some of the great sixth and seventh round picks we've ever made were Jason Kelce, freak. Jordan Mailata, freak. So if you're going to hit on guys on day three, they better be unusual. This is the easiest way to use athletic testing.
Yeah.
Yep. Take a shot rather than like, hey, let's take the bad athlete who looks good on special teams.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? I mean, truly, who cares?
Okay.
Nicely done, Josh.
I did my best. I know I spoke a lot in that one, but
no, that was good.
This is my homework to put together the top 41. And as you all know, let me know in the comments what you would have changed, mm-hmm. which players you ended up with in your draft. I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, I think it's very valuable. You go through, listen to all these press conferences, all these little details, I think really do matter. So very good episode.
All right. There it is. We'll be back later on this week with actual rankings for other positions as well. So be on the lookout. Hit subscribe. Thumbs up. Shout out to producer Weaves. Shout out to Hayden. Talk to y'all soon. See ya.